Hello, this is Property Matters, a weekly catch-up on the world of property, supported by Fairview International Property Consultancy and auctionproperty.co.uk. Live every Sunday, 10 a.m, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and our website, propertymatterstv.co.uk. If you're watching on our website, please leave us a Google review. If you're watching via social media, get involved in the conversation below. The email address for discussion topics is hello@propertymatterstv.co.uk. If you don't have the chance to listen to us on a regular basis on a Sunday morning at 10 a.m, you can get us on the move with the podcast available from the podcast sites over on the far side of the screen. And we're live across the week on Dilsay Radio. So let's say good morning to our specialist property expert, Joe Joshi. Morning, Joe.
I like the specialist bit.
Yes.
Yes, good morning. Good morning to everybody. Good morning to our listeners and viewers, wherever you are. And of course, the world of property continues to flourish.
Let's have a look at the rental market, Joe, because we haven't talked about that for a couple of weeks. It's always close to the top of mind, but not at the moment. So the latest Zoopla data is in. This is for March 2024. And as you can see on the screen, I'll read it out for those listening. We're 7.8% annual inflation now for new lets in the UK. So UK inflation slows to 7.8%, a two-year low for the rental market. Rental demand down 20% year on year as one-off pandemic factors ease and the labour market cools. A fifth more homes available for rent than a year ago, but current supply still below pre-pandemic average. Rental inflation slows rapidly in London to 5.3% as supply and demand imbalance narrows and affordability pressures hit pace of rent rises. Scotland remains the area with the fastest annual growth at 11.6%. Over half of private rented homes are in the £1,000 a month plus per month category. And rental affordability at decade high and unlikely to improve very quickly. Expansion in rental supply is the main route to better affordability. So let's just dissect that very slowly. The heat is finally coming out of the UK rental inflation. The heat is finally coming out of UK rental inflation, which has slowed to 7.8%, down from 11% a year ago, the lowest rate for 2 years. The average rent in the UK now is £1,223 per month. A lot to dissect and unpack there, Joe. What's your thoughts already?
Well, I mean, the rental market was absolutely on fire over a year ago. It's always down to supply and demand, Paul. And the demand was very, very high because obviously when interest rates went up, the chance of people having to buy or in a position to buy became a little bit of a challenge, to say the least. So the rental market was absolutely cooking on gas. That's kind of settled down a little bit. So, you know, it's obviously not as high as it was. Having said that, the right kind of property, if it comes on the market, doesn't last more than a couple of days. It, you know, does get snapped up and the demand is still high. In terms of the values, yes, I mean, 1,250 quid a month is a far cry from where it was not that long ago. I mean, literally within the last 3 or 4 years, it's gone from what used to be an average one bedroom at £700-800 a month, now to £1,200-1,500 a month. It's almost doubled in that sort of time. And that's based on a number of things. And one of them is the supply and demand. The demand got very, very high. The supply was very, very limited. And also there's a number of people that came out of the market and are still exiting the market. Those are landlords that got properties that they had at lower rates. And now those rates have gone so high that it's just not viable for them to keep. And so subsequently they want to sell. So that demand changes a lot. There's not as much available, though there is now a little bit more coming back to the market and perhaps some new people entering the buy-to-let market, hoping that you know, they've got a new sort of bar set for what they could be achieving and based on what they're borrowing. So quite a mixed bag of lettings going on, and still out in the, you know, the jury's out on all the changes that the government still wants to make on the private rental market as well. So you know, it's all in abeyance, but for those that can't afford to or can't even get onto the run of the first ladder for first-time buyers, rental is the only direction for them.
Yeah, I can imagine a lot of cash buyers are looking at taking up some of the properties that landlords that were using a buy-to-let mortgage may have sold, and so they could have entered the market and maybe got different sums to add up for them. It's interesting to see that the moderation in rental inflation is down to weakening demand and growing affordability pressures rather than a major expansion in supply. Levels of new investment by private landlords remain low. The average letting agent now has 12 homes for rent. This is a fifth higher than last year, but 28% below the pre-pandemic average, which was 16. So it's interesting, isn't it, that people are not choosing to rent. So I guess, where are they living? It must be perhaps still with parents, maybe. Who knows?
No other choice unless they're unfortunate enough to be in a cardboard, out on the streets. Yes, where people are still living at home, and it makes eminent sense from their point of view. It gives them a chance to save, and it gives them a chance to sort of get their ducks in a row in order to either go out and rent and buy. And also, the rentals have become so expensive. So there's two aspects that are happening: living at home and a massive market in sharers, huge market. I go back to the early days, back 30 years ago, and it was a massive thing that people would buy a two-bedroom property as opposed to a one-bedroom where they could, knowing full well that the second room was always going to be something that they were going to rent out or share out. And some other areas that have actually killed that are things like the Airbnb. But so either parents or short-term rental or sharing has become the way. The affordability factor is now become a huge thing, especially in London, perhaps, and in the Home Counties. There was never a thing about affordability. There was never a situation where somebody had to sort of go and do a whole reference check on someone, check their income, all that kind of stuff, just simply to rent a property. It was very simple in the old days. You want to rent a property, you like it, you put your deposit down, and hey presto, move in. But now there's a whole barrage of questions that are brought up, and in that are these situations where they've got to actually check out the affordability. So an average person has got to earn X, 35, 40, £45,000, even in order to get a simple rental property. So that does cause a huge problem for people that want to rent. And so subsequently, they either do short-term sharing or stay at home.
Demand for rented homes has fallen by a fifth over the last year as one-off pandemic factors recede, the labour market cools, and lower mortgage rates support first-time buyers. However, there remains more than 15 inquiries for every home for rent. This is down from over 40 per property in 2021, but still double pre-pandemic levels. So that's interesting, isn't it? So therefore, the number of inquiries is less, so people presumably staying at home. But also, maybe that's because obviously lower mortgage rates. People are saying, "Well, do you know what? I'm not going to rent anymore. I'm just going to go and see if I can get a property for myself."
Either way, the test for ability, affordability is a driver. Now, if they can, of course, so you're right there, if they can afford to go and buy, why do they want to rent? And actually, even with the rates where they are, if you look at the balance between rental value and mortgage value is far more attractive at the moment than rental. So, if you're looking at a one-bedroom flat, for argument's sake, and paying £1,500 a month more rental on it, you could probably pay a mortgage of a grand and save £500 at this moment on the some of the fixed rates that they've been offering. And so that has been a discussion that has happened with some people where they come in and say, "Look, you know what? It's going to be a tough thing, but I go to the bank of mum and dad, borrow some money from them, put the deposit down, and I'd rather go and have a mortgage." In some ways, it's actually a more serious commitment as well, Paul. It gives them a real tangible thing to sort of, have stability in their life. And make sure that they want to have a direction. So having a mortgage, knowing that they've actually bought their own property, is actually a huge, big step in the right direction for a lot of people. So you're absolutely right. They could be actually now beginning to think, well, interest rates, it hasn't changed. It's still 5.25%. They're talking about it might come down in the summer sometime, but the reality is it's going to be around five. So first-time buyer mortgage offers are anything between 3.5, 3.75 to 4% fixed over a given period, depending on how much deposit they're putting in, and of course, subject to status. But the reality is that all of those options are open, and we have come through some of that difficult time. When you think back, you know, 23, beginning of 23 was pretty dire. Rates went up almost on a monthly basis, and the cost of living went up. And so thinking about that in the early part of 24, you know, we're a far cry from where we were a year ago.
Interesting that since 2017, homes for rent per agent compared to the pre-pandemic levels, which was the average in 2017 to 2019, they're down 28%. So that's roughly the same sort of time the government introduced all of their changes to buy-to-let, the restrictions and the greater legislation that were put on them, the fact that they couldn't claim interest relief or tax relief on some of their profits, for example. All those kind of that legislation that came in. One wonders to what extent that drop of a third has anything to do with the fact that landlords are saying, I just can't make it work anymore.
Well, I mean, apart from all the changes financially, it's equally the want, it's the other cost pool and maintenance wise. So when you look at things like we've talked about it, you know, EPC rating, for argument's sake, you know, there was this big thing on about having the EPC rating going up. So some of those properties that were going to cost a refurbish of £15,000-£20,000, they'd rather not get involved in doing that. So there's been a huge exit for a number of reasons. And one of those could be things like upgrading for the EPC for the future, mortgage rates going the way it is, taxations that come through, and also time. You know, I've spoken to a lot of landlords who are at a time in their life where they're not interested in the leaky tap job anymore. They just want to be out and, you know, let somebody else have that hassle. And they've done it for years and years and years. So it's just about timing, I think.
I wonder what the situation is. On the screen now, we've got the rental inflation figures from January 23 to January 24. So this is year on year to January. So if we look at London on the screen there, so what it was saying was basically a year ago in January, rental inflation was 15.3% in London. It's a third of that now. It's 15.1 exactly. Oh, sorry, 5.1, I beg your pardon. So 15.3 down to 5.1 in London. That's a dramatic drop. And as you can see with Yorkshire and Humberside, South West, West Midlands, East Midlands, South East, Eastern Wales, North West, North East, Scotland is the only other one, perhaps it's a similar situation. But most of them have remained reasonably close. But what's happening in London for rental inflation to drop by to one third of what it was a year ago?
Well, I think the choice, it's been a buyer's market pool for London. And people have been looking to buy as opposed to rent where they can. And also internationally, it's been a little bit slow. We've got a lot of wars going on here, there and everywhere. Some of our bigger customers that may have originally come over and taken long-term rentals, Russia, for example, are not welcome in the country at the moment because they've had their assets frozen and all sorts of other things. So I think London's driven by an international market quite a lot. But more than anything else, for the first-time buyers, those that can buy, it's also been a market where they can turn around and say, well, actually, I'd rather not rent because the rents have been quite colossal. You know, a room rate, for argument's sake, on a weekly basis in some cases in London, not in a monthly basis. In the other areas that we talk about, things are discussed on a monthly basis. In London, we are almost of the same equivalent on a weekly basis. So sometimes you could be renting a room for £500 a week, whereas in another place, you could be renting an entire place for £500 a month. So there's a huge difference that London brings for these sort of things.
Another couple of things to notice in there, Scotland as well, Joe, is the only part of the country that's still in double figures. So rental inflation there is 11.6. So comparing that to just remind everybody what it was overall, it's 7.8. So it's some 5% or thereabouts above what it was in what it is in the UK. Any thoughts on why Scotland might be still so sky high compared to the rest of the UK, apart from London?
I think, you know, Scotland has its own little thing, but I think it's down to the fact that people, you know, want to rent. The affordability factor really kicks in there. Employment structure really kicks in there. And sometimes it's just safer to be in the rental market, which is why that figure has not really dropped. And so there's no other alternative for people there, even for first time buyers. It's a challenge in the north, especially in Scotland. And so I think that's probably why it still stays in double figures.
And the northeast, the only one with a dramatic bucking of the trend, really, because everything's just about either par for what it was a year ago, or a little bit up or a little bit down, or in London's case, a lot down. But the northeast there, it's gone up from sort of 7 to 9%. So I do remember some 6 months ago we were saying about that was the place where everyone was buying. Maybe lots of buy-to-let landlords have looked for property in the northeast and seen that the low prices might mean a good yield.
Well, yeah, I mean, the north has provided a very, very good return on investment yield-wise. So there's no question about how many people have invested. I think the only thing that we find after they've invested is manageability and the fact that you could be driving for 3, 4, 5 hours to get to somewhere which may sort of take out the fun out of the profit sometimes, because the travel itself could cost you a fortune to get there. But the reality is that those areas did provide a good value. I mean, we got recently instructed on a property in Hartlepool, of all places, and a small, you know, property there, 10 grand you can buy that for. And in some places down here, you can't even think about a deposit for that kind of money. So, you know, but somebody will buy that at £10,000. Or thereabouts, and we're guiding it at £10,000, and you know, you might find that somebody will buy that, but the rentals aren't that good. But by comparison for yield, you know, return on investment, you might find that someone's going to pay you, I don't know, £300 or £400 a month for something like that, and that's still a great return on that investment.
Yeah, put it on the credit card.
But yours is good enough for that black card you got. Is great. You can do that.
In your dreams. Right. Half of the rented homes in Britain are £1,000 plus per month in many markets. The pandemic years have driven a step change in rents, which have jumped 29% higher since January 2020. This has pushed many more rented homes into higher rental brackets. Analysis of average rents by local authority reveals that over half of rented homes, 51%, are now in markets with average rents of over £1,000 a month, which is almost double the level 5 years ago. So that's a stark reminder, really, Joe, isn't it? We're sitting here talking about the fact that things are slowing down and things are looking more affordable. But that last bit there, almost double the level of 5 years ago, rents are now over £1,000 a month.
Yeah, I mean, rents are crazy, honestly, by comparison. Really been shocking myself on some of the rents that people have been prepared to commit me. What scares me, I suppose, in those things is they do make that commitment, and it's how long it is that they can be able to sustain that. You know, it might be good short term, but if you're in there for a 12-month, 24-month period, your job circumstances change, your personal circumstances change for any reason, you know, you could be in deep water before you know it, and it's absolutely crazy for what the rent values are at this moment in time.
Yeah, they're saying that nearly all private rented homes, so 51% across the country, but if you look in the southeast, nearly all private rented homes are in that £1,000 plus per calendar month, compared to less than half as it was in 2020. If you go to the east of England, it's 70% today, compared to 24% in 2020. Over half of the rented homes in the southwest are above this level. What I wanted to move on to was the new build-to-rent city centre rental markets, because this is a new economy that we have touched on this, and we did talk about the fact that maybe the government would like, you know, proper institutions to run big rental companies and have a sort of corporate structure to the rental market. And talking in this report here, Zoopla says that the growth of the £1,000 per calendar month areas is now expanding into regional markets, outside the south of England's new city centre rental markets emerged. The rise of corporate and institutional investment in rented homes has led to the delivery of over 90,000 new build to rent homes across the UK in recent years, with more to come. House builders are also starting to sell homes to corporate landlords. We find a fifth of rented homes in Scotland, the North West and East Midlands and West Midlands are now in areas over £1,000 per calendar month. No local markets had rents over £1,000 per calendar month outside the south of England just 3 years ago. The North East is the only area with no markets over this level, while Yorkshire and Humberside has just 4%. So that's interesting, isn't it, that they're building these build-to-rent places. They're either renting them out themselves or they're selling them on to corporate landlords.
Well, let's pick that up for a bit by bit. The corporate landlord situation is good and bad. The good thing is, obviously, for the builders, they've got a ready-made buyer. The bad thing is, as long as corporate landlords come in, it's a bit like going back to the old days when the buy-to-let was invented. You know, small landlords came into the market. It meant that the first-time buyers was just never ever going to get onto that run of the ladder, because corporate landlords will just say, okay, we'll buy a whole block from you, and then they'll rent it out, and so they'd never get a chance to be into the market. So that has a minus and a plus side of things. Of course, the plus side of it from a corporate landlord's point of view is that they can actually steady the rental values, and they can not yo-yo as much as they do based on supply and demand. So if they've got a block of 100 flats at all one bedrooms, for argument's sake, you know, they can have it linked to some sort of inflation whereby they say, look, you know, in the next 2 years, it might go up by 2, 3, 4, 5% in the rent value, but fundamentally you are going to be all paying about the same. In a funny sort of way, it feels almost like a hotel, or should I say apart hotel is a big word that is put around Europe. So they have apart hotels where they have an apartment that operates a bit like a hotel operation. They provide all the facilities and you just have your own little section in that, and you can rent that, come and go as you please, short term, long term, weekly, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there is a little bit of European style, especially coastal holiday European style, coming into this, where people could say, well, actually, I could take it and leave it, you know, a bit like an Airbnb, except the Airbnb rules are fairly stringent because everybody's in it. But if the corporates are just going to do it, maybe they can do short-term, long-term rentals.
Just wrapping this one up, Joe, Zoopla say that looking ahead, they projected the UK rental inflation would halve over 2024 to 5%. It's almost there. The consensus among economic forecasters is that the average earnings growth will slow to just below 4%. It means no immediate prospect that rental affordability will improve over the rest of this year. A sustained expansion in available supply would drive a faster slowdown in rental inflation than we might expect. It's likely to result in rents falling in some city centre locations. This may well happen in 2024, but not on a scale that would impact the headline growth rate. Ongoing low levels of net new investment means below average levels of rental supply are set to persist, supporting headline rental inflation. The clear conclusion is that the best way to improve affordability is to boost rental supply. More supply will continue to come from the new build sector, here we go, but the big needle mover would be more investment by private landlords. This is currently looking unlikely, and further rationalisation of landlord portfolios in the face of higher mortgage rates and growing regulation will offset any increase to new investment in the rental supply. It strikes me that the government's relying on the cavalry here, and that's those big corporate investors to come in with these new builds.
Well, look, they've got masses of targets. They're never going to meet those targets the way they are designed. They need to, and we have discussed this. You look at some of the major supermarkets that sit on huge sites have now started to come into this corporate rental market because they can build, you know, 1,000, 100,000, 20,000, 50,000, I don't know, apartments, properties on some of their land. So if you go into an out-of-town supermarket, you've got this huge spread of a supermarket and nothing in the air. So now what they're thinking about is, well, actually, we've got the car parking, which is not always used 24/7, 365. We've got land and airspace. Why don't we just put another block on top? A, we got ready-made customers coming into our shop 24/7. B, we've got a car park full, and a full car park always means that other people feel they need to go to that store because something must be going on. And the idea goes on. So as far as I'm concerned, they are really counting on some of these people. And majority of the supermarket people, like Tesco's and even John Lewis, Waitrose, those people are all beginning to sort of go into the corporate rental market. Not corporate in the sense that they only want to rent out to corporations, but as a corporate, they're offering private renters that opportunity to rent, which has been a failing in some cases on housing associations. Now, housing associations have had lots of handouts and actually not done what they should have done, because they always want to nick it. They want to buy it for next to nothing. And then come in. They say they're not for profit making and the charitable status, etc. But of course, you know, they, like most people, will get a very expensive CEO who's been paid stupid money to come and stand there. So they're still getting paid to do the job. But the reality is that they're not actually, you know, showing a profit. But housing associations have really come under a lot of criticism for a lot of reasons. Some of the things we talked about last week on our program, when, you know, they've had all these situations where they have inflated rentals, inflated service charges, all those things that have actually tarnished the image of some of the housing associations.
Indeed. Let's move on to our second story. And this is one of your favourites, Joe. It's estimated that there are just over 1.5 million properties sat abandoned and derelict across England and Wales. This comes from analysis from Property Lender Together. They find, as of 2023, the total of 1.55 million residential homes are worth in the region of £531 billion if renovated and reintroduced to the housing market. These homes are registered as completely abandoned, with no usual or short-term residence in place or use as a second home, without any clarity on plans for sale or redevelopment either. Close to one in five empty homes, 18%, have been vacant for at least 6 months, a study found. Top three regions where the volume of empty properties is rising is led by the southwest of England at 20%, East England at 16%, East Midlands at 15%, and while Wales has seen volumes decrease by 13% in recent years, there are still over 90,000 abandoned properties across the country of Wales. Indeed, 36% believe addressing the crisis of the UK's abandoned and derelict homes should sit high on the government's levelling up agenda, second only to the cost of living. So, looks like you've got public opinion on your side, Joe. My question is, though, somebody must own that property, and how are you going to persuade them to make any changes? They're sitting on it for a reason, doing nothing with it for whatever reason. How are you going to make them change it? Presumably they're privately owned.
Yes, this is an observation I've been making for many years, and we've talked about it on our show, I think, several times over. You know, I've always felt that the government's target of providing homes can easily be reached. And if you look at the numbers that you have just talked about, it sort of knocks the ball out of the park very quickly if they actually took heed to some of this guidance and made people do something with those properties. And if you then combine what are vacant properties or derelict or not lived in properties, along with the number of properties that have had got planning permission granted on expanding and developing, and yet those people have done nothing about it, with those two combinations, we would meet the targets hands down. If we got on with it and actually put some time on it and put some spin on it and said, look, if you don't do this, we're going to do X, Y, Z. So what can we done? First of all, potentially, I'm not saying this is correct, potentially there could be some sort of CPO, compulsory purchase orders, on properties that last and lie empty for an unreasonable amount where they haven't brought them into back into sort of function. Sometimes you drive around the country and it just throws me, because I do a lot of that, as you know, drive around the country and looking at properties, and it just blows my brains that something is just sitting there, for years on, roof's caved in, it's just not doing anything. It belongs to someone, and that someone is either now elderly, it's part of a trust or part of an estate. Someone somewhere doesn't know, they might be ill. It just could, the whole barrage of things that could happen. And so subsequently, it just sits there doing nothing. In the meantime, it could be. And also, I think that if incentives were given, and this is a new one you hear here first, if incentives were given to someone to say, I've got a derelict property, I can't afford to do anything with it, but if you want to come in and renovate it and rent it, then I will give you a rent-free period for the next 5 years, because I've earned nothing out of it for the last 20 years. So that gives an incentive to people to come in and say, okay, well, I don't mind putting my money into having this develop if I know that I'm in here for a 5, 10, 15, 20 year rental plan with this guy. I can make it my own home, and we're all in a win-win situation. I build it and get a long term. He gets himself an asset that's actually now worth something, but he couldn't afford to do it. And it's a home created for a family in a very nice location, perhaps, that's just sat there lying derelict. So there's lots and lots of thoughts and processes that not just I could come up with, but I'm sure people in the industry come up with and actually can make it happen, which is why it's good to see that Lucy has kind of brought this forward to the front, about saying that there's all these homes lying empty and what can we do to do it. I think there's a lot of creative work that can happen with people, and the government can support that. Even if they were to turn around and give some sort of building allowances, they used to when they used to have council houses before they flogged the whole lot off. They turned around and used to say, well, we'll give you a grant to put in a new bathroom, or we'll give you a grant to upgrade your kitchen, or you need central heating put in, we'll give you a grant to do that. Even in some cases, the councils back in the days were mortgage lenders, and maybe in hindsight, they should have become the mortgage lenders again, because they can't actually, do damn decent investment. They're rubbish at doing that. They can't organize that. But they might be able to say, look, we'll do a 25-year mortgage to someone who's going to go and make this happen. We get the rental and the mortgage payments back to us with an interest, and we get a property put back together, which somebody's put together. There's loads and loads of things that I could come up with, and make sure that these things are available. And I'm really happy to see that. It's been brought to the front, forefront, and I think we can beat those targets. So Joe Joshi for Prime Minister, no problem. We but well, these aren't like mad ideas. They're just ideas that can happen. But you know what? There's somebody sitting in front of you says, it says, what's that thing Catherine Tate says? The computer says no. It's just, that's what it says. Can't do it, can't, because it's not my idea, so I'm not going to let it go forward. But I think there's a lot of properties lying derelict, so they should be able to do CPOs. They should be able to, come to some sort of negotiation and say, look, let's put this deal together. And there are people out there that would do it. There's lots of youngsters out there that would love to put their own mark on a property. They'd love to get involved. They may have one aspect of the funding. For example, they may have enough with parents' help to do the house up, but they may not have enough for the deposit and for the mortgage. But if they could do it up and do a deal with the landlord that owns that property and rent it for a given period to give a return on their investment and time, equally a return to the owner by saying that he ends up with a property that was actually derelict and now is brought back into use, is a win-win situation, Paul.
Yeah, Property Lender Together has got together with Homes Under the Hammer presenter Lucy Alexander to back the campaign to get some headline news, which is why everyone's talking about it. I guess, as you rightly say, 1.55 million homes in the UK, Joe, are sitting there dormant. But you did mention last week, of course, one of the barriers is the huge rise in the cost of renovation. So you were talking about £300 per square metre last week. That does make it very difficult. So there's got to be incentives put in there somehow.
Yes, I mean, look, if the builders, if the building cost has become expensive, and you're not going where the whole thing goes pear shape, or is that first of all you've got to buy land. Land values X, that's become expensive. Then on top of that, you've got building costs, that's become expensive. But if land value can be at zero, for argument's sake, because it's doing nothing, it's derelict, and that can be put into the pot and say, right, here's our land as part of the deal, you bring the building cost, we're beginning to make sense. Somebody's going to do it if they can have a contract for the next 15, 20, 25 years on it and say, I get my return on investment. Well, if it's lied empty for the last 15, 20 years doing nothing, it can't be any worse than that going forward, except at the next 15, 20 years, they've actually got a property that they've built out. Now, that they might give them a chance for that person that rented it to buy from that person. You know, it might be you say, okay, well, we've been here now, we've shown you our affordability, maybe we can do a mortgage with you. And councils and local councils can get back into the mortgage market very, very easily. They've got money that they do, but most of them have wasted it on things that they think they've become asset managers. They're not asset managers, they can't manage nothing, they can't manage the basic council tax on the potholes, let alone go and do a property portfolio. So, you know, do what they're supposed to do and let somebody else do the things that they're good at doing.
Absolutely. Well, we'll keep an eye on that story as it develops. I'm sure over the coming months it's one of Joe's favourite topics, so it's not going to go away anytime soon on this programme, that's for sure. Thank you as always, Joe. Thank you for watching. We'll be back with another Property Matters very soon.